It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. College football has never been bigger. With big TV deals and the support of ticket-buying fans, as well as that of boosters and donors with deep pockets, college football last year was a $2.5 billion entertainment business. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Gilbert Gahl has covered the finances of nonprofit organizations, agribusiness, and more. In his new book, Billion Dollar Ball, the former reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Washington Post is looking into what may be the largest nonprofit industry in the United States, college football. Gahl argues that America's largest and most prestigious universities are spending 10 times more on their football players than on their smartest, most ambitious students. So do they really have a place in academic institutions? And we welcome Gilbert Gahl to the show. Gilbert, thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
So just as an example, one of the programs you've looked at is the University of Texas at Austin. How much profit do the Longhorns bring to the university?
To the university or to the athletic department? Because it's different. The athletic department, let's see, in the year that I was looking at, 2012, I actually looked at their finances from 1999 through 2012, which is actually, it's weird, but it's partially 2013. Anyway, their profit was $78 million in 2012. Most of that money was plowed right back into the athletic department. They may have given a couple of million dollars to the regular university, but one of the things that maybe average football fans don't understand is that this money generally, by and large, stays in the athletic departments.
Well, $78 million is a fair chunk of revenue. When you compare some of these top-tier programs like Texas and their profit margins, yep, how does it rate against for-profit corporations?
Well, yeah, I do that in Billion Dollar Ball, and what you see is that it dwarfs private company profit margins. You know, you can make an argument that's not exactly apples to apples, but it's an interesting way to think about the amount of money that they are making. So, yeah, I mean, even a company like Apple, which makes huge profits as a percentage and in absolute terms, some place like Texas or one of the other schools, Michigan or Auburn or Alabama or someplace like that, as a profit margin, they exceed basically all of the private sector.
Well, if you're looking at the athletic department and what they've been bringing in Texas, they've been doing very well as far as increasing revenue. They're just one of a group of elite programs that has seen staggering increases in revenue just over the last few decades. You document this. The 10 largest programs grossed $229 million in 1999, and that's jumped to $762 million in 2002. What are some of the ways that college football programs are making money that they hadn't in the past?
Right. Well, it's not so much how they hadn't in the past. There's some truth to that, but generally what has happened is the scale has exploded in college football. And so things like something, again, average fans probably don't understand, is something called seat donations. So if you want to get one of the better seats at a college football stadium, take Alabama. The waiting list as of 2013 was 26,000 strong to get a season ticket to a football game at Alabama. So the only way you're going to get that ticket is one of two ways. You can either write them a check, a huge check for thousands and thousands of dollars to move up the list, to jump up to the head of the list, to get eligible to get a ticket, or you can make annual payments year after year after year to, let's assume they have either a booster club or some type of organization, which most schools do, to handle the ticketing for college football. And you are required to make these mandatory payments in order to get these premium seats. So that's a phenomena that really kind of grew up starting in the mid-'80s and then explodes in the 90s and 2000s. So that at places like Texas, if you want to try to get a seat on the 50 or 40-yard line, you're talking about, you know, writing a check for $25,000 or thereabouts in order to be just eligible to get that. So on top of that, you have all of the scaling up of the payments from ESPN and Fox and CBS for the television fees and broadcasting rights. You have the corporate money that's come in, the advertising. You have the Nike, Under Armour, all those apparel-type companies and their corporate sponsorship money coming in. And then, you know, finally, you have the ticket prices. So you have those three major or four major sources of income.
We're talking with reporter Gilbert Gahl. His new book, Billion Dollar Ball, takes a look at the big money culture of college football. One of the things that is unique about college football in the sports entertainment industry and this scaling that you talk about is the tax picture. For instance, when somebody buys one of these seat donations, when they give this money to reserve their season tickets in these prime locations, the purchaser, do they pay taxes on all of that?
No. So what happened was the IRS in the mid-'80s, in 1984, took a look at these seat donation schemes, and they concluded appropriately that, you know what, this is not charity. This is a quid pro quo. You're getting something in return for your payment. It's a purchase. So they tried to tax it, and long story short, the football lobby beat it back. And in, I think it was 1988, if I remember correctly, that Congress actually embedded in legislation language allowing these, I'll put it in quotations, donors to deduct 80% of the cost of the seat, mandatory seat payment as a charitable gift to the university.
When you look at some of these big TV contracts, money that the athletic departments are bringing in from these negotiations through all the schools for ESPN or somebody to pay for exclusive rights, do the schools pay taxes on that revenue that's coming in?
No, they don't. And those contracts generally are negotiated not by individual schools but by the conferences. So the Pac-12 back in, don't hold me to this year, 2010 renegotiated its television contracts, put them out for bid. And ESPN and Fox bid jointly. And I think the total payment, long-term payment to the Pac-12 is equal to about $3 billion over X number of years. So all of that money that flows back is considered tax-exempt. It's considered part of the charitable mission of the universities. So in other words, in effect, the way I put it is it's the unlikely charity known as college football.
Well, let's talk about this charitable mission. Obviously, these are academic institutions, and they pretty much run on the backs of student athletes, scholar athletes. Let's talk about those athletes. They aren't paid to play. It's a scandal if they were to receive a gift of any kind. But they get free tuition often, and I think it would be naive to say that many of these athletes aren't there to play football and that their education is secondary. So let's talk about their education. How much money do athletic departments spend to keep these kids within the academic rules so they're eligible to play?
Right. So one of the things that has changed, and depending upon your point of view, this is either a good thing or another example of the scaling up of college football and to a certain extent the absurdity of how large and how distorting the effect of football has become on these elite football universities, is they have now what are known as academic support centers. And they literally, what I call them, are charter schools for athletes, especially for football players and basketball players, because those are the two problem sports for the most part. And it involves everything from making sure they get up, students get up to go to class. They have, at University of Kansas, they have 15 retirees who are assigned athletes each morning at 8 o'clock. They go to where the athletes are supposed to show up and then log them in, have them sign in to the classes so they know whether they're showing up or not showing up. At Oregon, I think they do 1,700 hours of tutoring per week at a $42 million extraordinarily lavish building that is exclusive for athletes, that has computer labs. They all get a free Apple laptop. They have tutoring sessions. They have academic advisors. They have reading and writing specialists. They have life coaches. They have psychologists, you name it. So there's incredibly large and expensive infrastructure that's been created in the last two decades to to keep these players eligible. And again, depending on your perspective, this is great. This is what the university should be doing. It owes the athletes at least this much. Or you could say, as I guess I argue in my book, that that's true, but it's another example of how college football has basically run amok.
And those are resources, as you mentioned, that are exclusive to athletes. I think you've done a comparison on how much money organization like Oregon that you talk about is spending per athlete compared to how much they would spend per regular student.
Yeah, well, I do that for many of the large football schools. And, you know, it depends on how you slice and dice the number. The Knight Commission has a database, and they slice it one way. I looked at just some sort of basic division of, okay, here's the cost of the football program, here's the number of athletes, here's what it equals per athlete. It works out to, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars per football player, versus on academics, if you do the same sort of exercise, it generally works out from somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000 per student. The other way of thinking about it is, look at how a school treats its smartest, its brightest, most ambitious students, the ones in public universities who generally end up in the honors colleges. And what you see there is all over the map. I mean, some schools are very generous, and some schools aren't nearly as generous. At Oregon, I looked at the honors college, and the scholarship that they gave out in 2012, I think, was $5,000 if you got in the honors college. But of that, they charged you $3,000 because you were in the honors college under the assumption you got a better education. So it netted out to a scholarship of $2,000. Now, some of those kids are getting other scholarships, but just looking at the honors college, $2,000. Value of a football scholarship, just the tuition, room, and board, is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $45,000 to $50,000 at a place like Oregon. And then that doesn't include all this other hand-holding for academics. Yeah.
Gilbert Gahl is the author of Billion Dollar Ball, A Journey Through the Big Money Culture of College Football. Gilbert Gahl, thanks so much for talking to us this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.